Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. Sudan's military leaders closed schools across the country.
Like what happened yesterday or before yesterday, these military police, they are shooting students, killing them. As a mother, I cannot leave my child to go to school, and there maybe they will be shooting around.
And relatives of detained South Sudanese airport officials say their loved ones are innocent.
Before he was doing his own investigation with 540, he was arrested. That's the only case we know, but if there's anything else that we don't know, maybe the national security know, but there's nothing that they're not telling us anything.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's Transitional Military Council has closed schools and universities across the country until further notice following the killing of 8 students in El Obeid, Kadukli on Monday. There has been mixed reaction from parents. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Military authorities say all schools shall remain closed until new announcement is made after the Eid of Al-Adha festivity on August 11th. Some parents say the rather drastic move will hamper their children's studies. Sabri Gassim, a father of 2, says he was surprised to hear all schools were suspended, a decision he says will negatively impact his daughter's education.
They have just started, let me say, almost 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and they have ambition to push on and to go with their studies. Out of sudden, now the school is closed up, and it was not expected that the school will close up in this way. So automatically they are at home now, they are not hurt at all.
Sumaya Abdallah, a mother of 3, says she supports the idea because the school officials or authorities cannot guarantee the safety of her kids in the school.
Like what happened yesterday or before yesterday, these military police, they are shooting students, killing them. As a mother, I cannot leave my child to go to school, and there maybe they will be shooting around.
Speaking in Arabic to journalists at the base of the African Union's office in Khartoum, Ambassador Mohammed Hassan Labat condemned this week's killing of 6 students by the Sudanese security forces in El Obeid. He says the African Union wants to see the killers arrested and tried in a court of law.
Those individual perpetrators should be urgently brought before the law of this country and should be answerable to their actions against the victims.
African Union mediators say a joint technical committee tasked with drafting a constitutional document is putting the final touch and is expected to be finished tonight. Labad is urging negotiators from the Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition to quickly resume talks and approve a revised constitutional document before civilian-led government is formed, adding Sudan is in dire need of recognized government.
We consider the urgent need for both parties to approve the constitutional document soon so that we form a civilian's government. I'm here notifying the parties, Sudanese citizens, elites and friends of Sudan to work according to this urgent need.
Labat says there will be a huge consequences for the country and the continent if the two sides do not agree on the revised document soon. Isra Daoud, a member of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition, confirms her group's readiness to resume talks with the military council at any time, and says her group's negotiators will meet later today with the technical committee's representatives and go through the document and possibly make amendments.
The leaders were in Kordofan out of Khartoum and just arrived today. They have a meeting, the professional committee that is writing the legal documents are now gathering. They will be gathered at 3 p.m. today. If they finish concluded all the points, they will announce.
Officials of the Sudanese Communist Party, a member of the coalition, also condemned the attack on students in Olobeid, adding their party will not be part of the government that shares power with the military council. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Relatives of Juba Airport officials who have been held in November 2018 are calling on authorities in Juba to try the five in a court of law or release them. The brother of one of the detainees says family members are allowed to visit the detained officials but are worried about their health conditions. Lasuba Memo has this report for VOA from Juba.
Tombe David says his brother, Subek John David, the chief executive officer at the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, was arrested in November 2018 while attempting to inquire why 540, a Kenyan airline, did not pay its landing fees.
Before he was doing his own investigation with 540, he was arrested. That's the only case we know, but if there's anything else that we don't know, maybe the national security know, but there's nothing that they're not telling us anything.
David says his 60-year-old brother and four colleagues were detained for more than a month at National Security Headquarters, also known as Blue House, before being transferred to the Juba Central Prison in January. He says all five have yet to be arraigned in court. Whenever relatives ask when the detainees will be tried in court, David says national security officials at headquarters tell them the case is no longer under their docket. He says the same goes with prison authorities.
If they feel that they have a case towards my brother, let them take him to court so that the court will decide whether this person is guilty or not. But to keep somebody for almost a year now without any court, so that's it's worrisome to us, the family.
Jacqueline Ibrahim Hilal and Simon Sebit were detained, both of whom were sent by the National Revenue Authority to collect taxes at the airport, as were two others identified only by their first names, Lalam and Ladule, who are 540 airline employees. Jacqueline Ibrahim Hilal's husband, Salah Selim, says his wife was accused of forging Form 15, an official form used for collecting taxes. He says the receipt bears his wife's single name, Jacqueline, but with a serial number of someone in Rumbek in former Lake State. When his wife complained and presented the forged form with her original form, she was arrested.
This is what has come out, that they are accused of fraud, playing with official papers and shared crime. I am appealing that in this situation, if someone has wronged, he or she should be taken to court. After that, they are charged, then they will know why they are in jail. It is not right for someone to be imprisoned without charges.
Selim says every 2 weeks he and other relatives visit the prison, but officials claim they have yet to complete investigations. Yesterday, Human Rights Watch called on South Sudanese authorities to release the airport and tax revenue employees or else promptly charge them with a specific offense and release them on bail pending trial. According to South Sudan law, anyone arrested must be arraigned in court within 24 hours. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
The sister of Tanzanian freelance journalist Eric Kabandera says the family has been prevented from seeing him. Tanzanian police confirmed yesterday they are holding Kabandera for questioning regarding his citizenship. Dar es Salaam Special Zone Commander Lazarus Mambo Sasa says Kabandera failed to respond to a police notice about his citizenship. His sister, Patricia Kabandera, says Eric is a Tanzanian citizen.
We've been at the police station until 6 evening. We've tried to ask at the main counter about his whereabouts, and they actually told us that he was not brought at the police station, as they said in their press conference. That was to our surprise because they did a press conference and said it was the central police station. So when we heard that, we just went straight because since he was being arrested, we didn't know his whereabouts. We didn't know the station where he was taken to. So that was new to us as a family. We were anxious to know if we could take any other services like legal services or social services, food and everything, clothes, because by then it was arrested for the past 24 hours. So that's the first thing we did after the police admitted that they're having him for questioning at the Central Police Station.
Yeah. Did the police tell you why they have him for questioning? What do they want to ask him?
Actually, they spoke about his citizenship. They are afraid that he's not a Tanzanian. They are not actually saying which country he's from or which citizenship he's from.
But you are a Tanzanian. But he is a Tanzanian, is that correct?
Exactly. We are Tanzanians. We are all born in Bukoba. He has more than 5 brothers here, sisters. He has aunties and all that. It's like half of our clan is here. These are not the first allegations. He has been accused with the same allegation in 2013. It's our surprise now. It's coming back. Don't know why, and why is it that it's only Eric and all the family that is going through the same issue. The same issue that he's been through 2013 and today again. He has more than 8 brothers and sisters. Why not any of us?
When the police came to get Eric, were you in the house or do you live in a different house?
Yeah, we live in a different house. But after I heard the news, I hid it there because I was trying to call his wife. They had taken her phone too, so any communication from the house. So I had to rush there because it's not far from where I live. Me and my husband rushed to his house to see what's going on.
Do you hope to try again to go to the police station on Wednesday?
Of course, we're doing that thing today morning because when we try to ask the police about his whereabouts and all that, after we failed to get him at the main desk, after he was called from the jail room to see if he's there, we made sure that he was not registered there. So we had to go to the upper officers, and they say if Mambosasa himself said he's at the police station, we advise you to go and see himself. So that's what we are holding to, waiting for us 7 a.m. to be there.
Priska, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's Priska Kabandera, the sister of detained journalist Eric Kabandera, speaking with my colleague James Batty earlier today. Zimbabwe has a long history of cracking down on free expression, starting during the early years of President Robert Mugabe's government. The new administration of Emmerson Mnangagwa says it's changing that stand, but recent arrest of screenwriters in Harare during a film screening raises questions. For VOA News, reporter Josiah Zanvashi has details.
Dev Skuja is a veteran scriptwriter, and he is among 4 screenwriters who were arrested for screening a film.
The arrest and arraignment of Dave Guja, producer, and Peter Churu, creative director, Theatre in the Park, together with Tendai Madua and Kudakwashe Bwititi, the producers of Lord of Kush, represents an unfortunate law in the relationship between the creative sector and state governance systems in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe Republic police were clumsy in the way that they carried out their mandate. It is our belief that this was an abuse of their constitutional powers and a blatant violation of our artistic and constitutional freedoms.
Tendai Madua gives a synopsis of the film, Lord of Kush, which prompted the arrest on Saturday.
Lord of Kush is a work of fiction. It's not a documentary film. It's a work of fiction inspired by a real incident that happened in Pakistan. We have a diplomatic family of Zimbabwe in Kush, so to speak. So this diplomatic family is a Christian family from a Christian background in a Muslim economy. So that's where our script centered around.
Kusha says the build-up to the screening was telling. The day before the screening, they got a visit from the Office of the President and Cabinet, also known as OPC.
When OPC came in on Friday, they were very clear in their minds that they had actually received a phone call. They said, we received a phone call from the embassy. And this phone call that has come through says that whatever you're about to show could be a security threat.
He says they were later given the green light to go ahead with the screening, only to be arrested when the movie was shown. The case is now in the courts, and the four writers are now on bail. They next appear in court on August 29th. Kuja says this will not put a damper on their work or force them to censor themselves. He adds that their arrest under the Censorship and Entertainment Control Act provides a chance to call for the review of this and other laws that contradict the Constitution of Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Jonglo State judge sentences a man to death by hanging. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what role does music play in your life?
To me, music is the harmonious voice of creation, an echo of an invisible world, a food of soul. When everything has gone against me, it is only music that sends a message to me that I have to keep going.
It depends on the type of music, but it actually has a big role in my life because, for example, whenever I'm sad, I feel like nothing else can make me happy apart from listening or singing.
When I'm happy, it doubles my happiness when I listen to some good music, and also when I'm sad and listen to sad music, doubled the sadness. So music plays a big role in my life.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A court in Jonglo State capital Bor has sentenced a 30-year-old man to death by hanging. He was charged for murdering another man. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglo State High Court Judge John Yela Leo announces the verdict for Bol Gai Kur, who is sentenced to death by hanging on Monday. The death penalty is rarely used in Jonglo State or in any other state of South Sudan. Judge Aleu says, according to police records, Guy intentionally murdered Alir Lengmach on June 21st after fighting with him in a cattle camp in Kolnyang.
He came at the evening time around 8:30 and beat the man while he is just sitting in his place. He beat him with the sticks on his head up to death. So he's been arrested. We ask the relative of the deceased, and they are insist that they don't want to be compensated. So the man has been convicted under Section 206, which is murder, intentionally.
Judge Aleu says after Guy confessed to murder, after telling police the victim insulted him, the court had no other option but to sentence Guy to death.
According to the witness, and even the brother of accused himself, is the witness of the persecution, is the one the man has been beaten near him. He said that there is no any assault, but the man came at the evening time around 8, and just they are surprised when he beat that guy.
Guy's brother Ngongai Kur declined to comment, but other relatives who did not want their voices to be recorded says the sentence was fair. On the same day, Judge Aliu sentenced 5 other men to 7 years in prison for killing 3 police officers in Bor in November. The judge said after an investigation, Ayuna Teng and Mangar Panchul and Makwin Akech were found guilty of murder under Section 206 for beating the police officers to death and then shooting them. They said two others were convicted of ambushing the police. Under customary law, the judge ordered the five to also pay 51 cows to each of the three families of the deceased and to compensate two other police officers injured in the attack. Speaking in Arabic, prosecution lawyer Dud Mareu says he will not appeal the verdict.
The judgment that has been passed, I see that there is nothing to say about because it was fair.
Defense lawyer Aler Bot for the five men says the sentence was unfair for one of his clients.
You know, the judge did not have our mitigation factor because according to general rules, section 9 of South Sudan Penal Code, the Mangar is a 17 years old. And therefore, that penalty is high for him. Although he has admitted the criminal responsibility, also the judge could have mitigated that age to lessen the sentences.
Judge Aliu says the violence on 13 November last year began when policemen were dispatched to arrest two suspects for failing to pay the fines of six cows in Bor County Court for breaking a man's arms. He says the suspect resisted and began firing at the police, leaving three police officers dead. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Nairobi. On January 15th, five militants stormed the DC2 hotel and business complex and killed at least 21 people. The attack by heavily armed extremists using guns and explosives demonstrated Al-Shabaab's continued ability to strike the capital. 16 Kenyans, one British, an American, and three other people from other African nations were killed in the attack. Today, the DC2 hotel and business complex in Nairobi celebrated its full reopening. My colleague Yahes Wuhib asked our reporter in Nairobi, Muhammad Yusuf, to talk about the significance of the opening.
Just to make it very clear, today the reopening itself, around morning hours, there's been motorbikes driving around several roads in Nairobi, flying the DC2 flag, which is orange in color, and the Kenyan national flag, just to symbolize and show that this hotel 6 months ago was under attack by Al-Shabaab, but now it's going to be a free place where people can come again and enjoy life. And the reopening began by raising the flag, of course, the hotel flag, which I've mentioned, which is orange in color, and the Kenyan national flag. Several ministers attended the ceremony, and the significance, one of the ministers, the tourism minister, said that Kenya is stronger than the evil forces, of course, referring to Al-Shabaab members who were attacked. And that's a very strong message to Al-Shabaab, that life will go on no matter what they do, and Kenya will always be above the men and women who are organizing terror attacks against the country and its people.
The ceremony seems very impressive, but Mohammed, what concrete steps have been taken by the government or even the hotel complex to prevent a repeat of what happened?
Of course, as you will expect, when there's such an attack, because it took a very long time for such a hotel to reopen, one thing that is so clear is that this has been going on. And what I do understand is there's been the government security agencies and the management have been talking back and forth, trying to see ways they can improve the security around the area. And for 6 months, of course, the security agencies, they have seen some lapses here and there, and then have given their recommendation. And, of course, the other biggest challenge is how do you overcome this kind of emotion? So remember, there were people who were involved living in that hotel. There were people working in offices within the complex. And will these people, these officers, come back again? Will these people willing to come back? I think this is what the hotel has been working on. And by them to come out clearly today to reopen the hotel and back to business, then it clearly shows that these are some things that they have agreed, they have sorted out. And they're going to put a very strong security mechanism on way forward now on how to prevent such attack that does not repeat again.
And lastly, Mohammed, all five militants who stormed the hotel and business complex were killed, and Somali-based Islamist group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility. So is the case closed, or is there an investigation into attacks still proceeding?
What is basically happening is that the government has made dozens of arrests before some were released after interrogation, but about five suspects were presented to the court, and at the time the investigators, they've asked for more time to investigate these people, and since then they haven't been brought in front of a judge. So basically, it seems that the investigation is still ongoing. It's just recently that we just concluded the man who suspected to have carried out or involved in Garissa University, which happened in 2014. And this is going to take the same length or the same time to conclude this kind of cases.
That's Muhammad Yusuf in Nairobi talking to my colleague Yahes Wuhib about the opening of this D2 hotel and business complex. We now turn to Ethiopia, where Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and his guest, Director of the World Food Programme, David Bursley, planted three seedlings on Tuesday in a salute to Ethiopia's Green Legacy Initiative, which seeks to combat climate change through mass tree planting. Ethiopian authorities say volunteers planted 350 million trees in the past week in an effort to curb climate change effects.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed launched his ambitious Green Legacy Initiative in May with the goal of planting 4 billion trees across Ethiopia by October. He has given government employees and students time off to take part in the initiative. Agricultural officials say more than 2.6 billion trees have been planted so far. A record of 350 million seedlings were planted in just 12 hours on Monday. Excessive tree cutting has depleted Ethiopia's forests and expanded its deserts, contributing to a rise in temperatures, shortage of water, and demise of many animal species. According to the United Nations, forest coverage in Ethiopia has declined from about 35% in the past century to about 4% today.
The rate of deforestation and the expansion of desertification, even at a global level, is because of the destruction of forests. This country was rich with forests before, but now it has been destroyed. So this is a good opportunity to bring it back to where it was.
Scientists say regrowing forests is a way to help keep climate change in check. In Ethiopia's case, it will also help the country build resilience toward drought and maintain a more stable rainfall.
The issue of environment is a major concern, even at the global level, but more so for this country. Most of the problems and famine we see in this country could be linked to the lack of protection for our environment.
Ethiopia is not the first to engage in forestation programs. India is engaging millions of volunteers to plant trees in its environmental campaign aimed at increasing its forests by 5 million hectares before 2030. China has one of the world's most ambitious tree planting programs, known as the Great Green Wall, designed to hold back the expansion of the Gobi Desert. But large areas of Indonesian, Congolese, and Latin American forests are still being lost to the loggers and palm oil companies, but there is more awareness of the damage they do. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
That report by Zlatica Hoc brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Emoya by Lomerica Jazz Band. We've been listening to Lomerica with the song Emoya. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
sana mabufi ya kai moya.